looking for economic fairness.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. You may have already heard this morning about the passing of Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy. He died last night at the age of 77. This morning, we look at the impact of the senior statesman's economic legacy. And joining us live from Washington to talk about that is Marketplace's Steve Henn. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Senator Kennedy's father, Joseph Kennedy, was the first head of the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission. But Ted Kennedy has really never been identified with Wall Street, right?
No, that's right, Steve. You know, his issues were always things like health care and civil rights, immigration reform, you know, fighting tirelessly to raise the minimum wage. Senator Kennedy's legislative legacy is really defined by his constant push to help the underdog.
But he was a polarizing figure at the same time.
Oh, no doubt. You know, Republicans have been using Teddy Kennedy to raise money for at least four decades. But he still managed to work across party lines and with conservatives to do major things. You know, he worked with a conservative to create the Children's Health Insurance Program, to pass a bill that allows employees to keep their health insurance after they leave their jobs. He even worked with Newt Gingrich to promote health IT reform. Healthcare was really the, you know, what he called the cause of his life, and he first became involved back in the 60s when he helped set up community health clinics. He became aware that low-income residents of Boston lived next to major hospitals but still had to wait hours for care, and used that experience to push to make care more accessible for low-income people.
So what does his death, Steve, mean for the healthcare debate in the Senate?
You know, that's unclear. Some Republicans, like John McCain, have wondered if Kennedy was really one of the only people in the Senate with the personal connections and expertise to break the deadlock there. You know, on the other hand, though, Democrats are certainly going to use his death to rally to this cause and possibly pass a bill in Kennedy's honor. For now, at least, though, Democrats in the Senate have lost a vote. Massachusetts law requires a special election, and that won't happen for at least 145 days. One of the last things Kennedy did was ask for that law to be changed so Democrats could get a senator in there quickly.
All right. Marketplace's Steve Henn joining us from Washington. Steve, thanks.
Sure thing.
Let's check the numbers. European shares are slightly lower right now. Asian shares closed higher. Wall Street yesterday, some small gains. The S&P added 0.25%. The Dow and NASDAQ about 0.33%. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce wants the Environmental Protection Agency to hold what it's calling the Scopes Monkey Trial of the 21st century. But instead of putting the teaching of evolution in schools on trial, as the state of Tennessee did way back in 1925, this time it would be the science of climate change. From the Sustainability Desk, here's Marketplace's Sam Eaton.
In coming weeks, the Environmental Protection Agency is expected to formally declare that CO2 emissions endanger human health. This would pave the way for heat-trapping gases to be regulated under the Clean Air Act. That's something the world's largest business lobby, the Chamber of Commerce, wants to prevent, and is hoping that a trial-like public hearing on climate science will be its ticket. William Kovacs runs the Chamber's Environment Division.
If we're going to put EPA in charge of virtually the entire economic functioning of the government, then we need to make sure we've got the science right.
But Brenda Eckwurzel with the Union of Concerned Scientists says the chamber's reference to the Scopes trial is a bad analogy because the science of evolution ultimately prevailed.
I think a better comparison are the Salem witch trials, which were based more on myths.
She says the EPA's endangerment finding, on the other hand, is based on decades of peer-reviewed science, concluding that CO2 emissions threaten human health and welfare. In Los Angeles, I'm Sam Eaton for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
India and China are increasingly influential in world trade. They're both giant Asian nations with billion-plus populations, and both see themselves as the world's factories. But having things in common doesn't necessarily make them friends. Raymond Thibodeau reports from New Delhi.
Just recently, Indian developers building large public works projects bought more than $8 billion worth of turbines and other heavy equipment. They bought it from China. Local businesses were left out in the cold. Indian politicians and manufacturers asked, why not buy from us?
Promoters of projects have placed orders on Chinese manufacturers because they're the cheapest.
One of India's biggest engineering companies is Larsen & Toubro. Deepak Maratta is an executive with the firm. He says China doesn't play fair. It artificially holds down the value of its currency so that overseas buyers need fewer dollars or euros to buy that Chinese product priced in yuan.
If you talk about globalization and a level playing field, then the leveling must apply to every aspect of a transaction, including the value of the currency.
Business leaders here say Beijing's trade policies protect Chinese markets from foreign competition and enable Chinese manufacturers to export goods cheaply. 2 years ago, China edged out the U.S. to become India's biggest trading partner. But many Indians say the balance of trade isn't in their country's favor. And that's feeding a growing resentment here of the Chinese.
They don't want to see the success of the Indian model as compared to theirs.
Vikram Sood is a security analyst and China specialist at Delhi's Center for International Relations. He says China never took India's growth story very seriously until now.
You know, there's competition between India and China in the context of commerce. There's a disputed border between the two countries. And there's competition for energy, for natural resources. And there's competition in the context of growing Indo-US relations, which the Chinese don't seem to view very favorably.
He says India-China relations recently soured further when a prominent Chinese think tank touched a raw nerve here by suggesting China instigate a breakup of India by supporting separatist groups. Few Indians think that's going to happen, but their swift and angry reaction shows how fraught things can be when two emerging economic giants wake from their slumbers at the same time in the same part of the world. In New Delhi, I'm Raymond Thibodeau for Marketplace.
Finally, when I think of rock bands and hotel rooms, it's usually not a pretty picture. For Motel 6, it's an opportunity to reach out to the youngsters. USA Today reports the chain will begin offering free hotel rooms to some touring bands. They say the move could put the hotel in the social networking universe, helping to reverse lower occupancy rates. Bands could say give a shout out to the chain on their website or even on stage, and hopefully not throw any lamps around when they're back in the room. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.